hour number two of Sports Talk begins. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and it's always fun when we get to go to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline to welcome another special guest. Jimmy, a longtime friend of the program, joins us now.
That's exactly right. It is Chris Woodruff. He is the Tennessee men's tennis coach, the only player in Tennessee history to win an NCAA singles championship. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. I hope that you and your family, your kids, everybody's safe. Everybody in the Woodruff family?
We're doing great, yes. Everything's going well so far.
Good. What have you been able to do as far as recruiting? We've seen the football team going great guns with all these commitments. What has that meant for you in an effort to try to recruit players for the upcoming class, for next year's class?
We've had some good success. You know, this eligibility where you could get a year back. So, you know, James and I, my associate head coach, we've been doing a lot of good work. So quite pleased with the progress that's been made.
So how many do you have coming back that were allowed to come back? How many are doing that?
We have two players that are coming back. Luca Wiedemann from Germany and Giles Hussey from England. Both those guys have said they wanted to come back. And furthermore, you know, Luke has been around a long time. And Giles, it would have been a shame, really. He played about 14 matches, and that would have been, you know, bad luck for him and bad luck for us had his career been over. But luckily, when he gets another, you know, a mulligan, per se.
So what have you been doing in terms of your players trying to stay in some kind of shape? I don't know if they're playing tennis wherever they're living now, but what have they been doing in that regard, Chris?
Well, they know what to do, and fortunately, a lot of the guys have played for me, and we've worked really hard to create a team culture, and we've been doing Zoom calls about every 10 days. We get on and get the whole squad together, which is quite difficult, as you guys know, having them from all over the world, Australia, trying to sync up with Portugal and, you know, American time. And so we've been doing Zoom calls, and some guys have more flexibility than others. And for a while it was touch and go. And it sounded like over in Europe it was more strict. You know, I guess the police would come around and knock to make sure that where are they? And if they're not in their house, where are they? So, but I think things they're doing a little bit better now.
I was about to ask, Chris, and first of all, it's great to talk with you as always, but when it comes to keeping tabs on players, not just across the country, but around the world, what has that challenge been like, and what has it been like to just watch the news to find out what might be going on in terms of their experience with the virus in their neck of the woods?
Well, for us, like I was saying earlier, the graduate transfer thing where the guys – some of these players from other schools, they go on with, you know, the transfer portal. And I've actually had the benefit of watching a lot of these guys who have hit the portal. So we're not going in there blind when we're trying to get a guy to come here. And as far as some of the other guys, we do a lot of video. I mean, we've been doing this a long time. I've been starting to believe I've been here almost 20 years. And so to watch it on video, you can kind of tell word of mouth, rankings, results, who he's beaten. Ideally, our first choice would be to get out and about, and so that's not going to happen for quite some time.
Well, I was actually talking more about we heard Rick Barnes share his experience of just making sure that his players got home safe and sound. What was it like from your aspect watching the Vols get back to their homes?
Oh, yes, no doubt. I understand what you said. Yeah, they all, when they left, you know, some of them, you know, needed to get out of here pretty quickly. And actually, one of our players' moms, you know, texted, said, "I'm really concerned about my son." You know, she was almost to the point of tears. So we made sure that everybody got back home, and they got back home, and they were able to text me and James and let us know, you know, how they were doing. And so it was actually really a big sigh of relief.
It was a great start to the season as you guys jumped up into the top 10. And I'm just wondering, how tough was it to see the season, see the curtain fall as quickly as it did?
Well, it's it was bittersweet, really. You get to doing this job and going a million miles an hour, and so at first everybody was devastated, and you know we were, like you said, we had just come off a big win, against Ole Miss, who was ranked a couple of spots ahead of us, and snuck that one out, and we were really just getting into the meat of the season, and we were playing on the road in Columbia, and I actually called Coach Barnes to find out how they were going to do it, or are they going to play, because that was kind of my benchmark, and I knew if Coach told me that, you know, they were going to run their tournament, then it was just a matter of hours that they were going to call and cancel ours. So then we get back home and still really didn't know that they were going to cancel the season, so we had practice the next day or so, and weights as normal, and finally they called it all off, and I was exhausted. I felt like I played all 15, 16 weeks of the season. And then you went through the boredom phase, and, you know, then it went through the wife. I'm not used to having you home this much, and when are you going to start up again? And, you know, we'd like it if the sooner the better. But now just recruiting is always checking the transfer portal and just, you know, doing things like that and having time to think about what we want to do if and when we start.
I guess Chris Woodger, Tennessee head men's tennis coach. Chris, do you have any idea when some of your players might return to campus? I know that they're allowing some football players. Well, what about your athletes?
You know, I'm not really sure. I just one of the things I've tried to do is we've got a great person that I work for, and she's been really good at kind of just informing me of what we're doing and what needs to happen. We had a call today, and it sounds like the league or getting out and about on the road recruiting may not happen, I heard at least on the call, July 31st for us. So that's a long time. So I really don't know what's going to happen, and just try to go one day at a time and continue to do these Zoom calls. And I've just told the guys that you need to be ready, because they could call one day and say, let's try to get them back over here and you know, start hitting some balls. So just try to stay on the toes as best we can.
We haven't had any pro tournaments in quite a while, and I wanted to get your perspective on this. You played on the pro tour for many years. Would you be leery of traveling to England or France or Australia or, heck, even to New York to play in a tennis tournament?
Personally, I would. I guess I'd also be leery if my ranking wasn't where it needed to be, in order to get into to get into all the tournaments, because I'm a little bit removed from it, but I've been following, as you guys know, I follow sports a lot, and the ATP Tennis Tour is really the only tour. You know, NASCAR started. I just read where hockey's going to give it a go. I read an article about NBA may start games at, you know, the complex in Disneyland, and then you have the ATP Tour. I haven't heard anything, you know, and I have guys who played here who are out and about, kind of, you know, not really knowing what to do. And then you factor in that half the stretch after the U.S. Open would be over, it goes to Asia. It's just so global, but I haven't heard anything from the tour about what their, you know, little template might look like or when they might start up.
I looked at the schedule, and it says the first men's tournament is going to be August 3rd through the 9th, the City Open in Washington. That's the first one I see on the schedule. That's a long time away, being away, isn't it?
Yes, it sure is. And then, you know, what do you do after that? And if that doesn't run, I mean, you can only, with tennis, the year ends of October. And really, if you cancel the next batch, then you're probably looking at not starting up until the first of next year. And that's, you know, who knows if that's going to happen.
Yeah, that is a great question. Do you think the challenge is greater for the world of tennis as opposed to golf? Now, granted, both have players from all around the world, but it does seem perhaps that tennis might see more nations represented than golf. It could be close, but do you think that's any more of a challenge, as well as how much of the activity takes place around the world as opposed to a lot of international players coming to the United States to play golf?
I think you're exactly right, Tom. There's no question that, at least looking from my perspective, that tennis is played, you know, every continent except Antarctica, right? and a lot of it. Like if you were to look at the ATP Tour schedule, there are tournaments all over the world. So how, being so global, and it's kind of all played under one tour, right, at the ATP Tour, whereas about, if I'm quick with golf, you have three or four, you know, different tours that seem to be run really well. Like the PGA Tour, you have the Korn Ferry Tour, you have the Australasia Tour, the European Tour, and it's all kind of, you know, run, I believe, as its own little deal. And then you have the ATP Tour that's run, and they run the Challengers, and they kind of tied into the Futures. And so, yes, I think you're exactly right. I have no idea how they're going to work it all out, being so global.
We got in, now this is off the cuff, we got into a discussion of greatest sports rivalry since we just saw the match with Mickelson and Brady against Woods and Manning, and it was best individual sports rivalry. And when it comes to the world of tennis, would you put Nadal and Federer ahead of Borg and McEnroe, or vice versa? What would you say would be the greatest tennis rivalry of all time? And could you put top three together without including Navratilova and Chris Everett from the women's side?
And that's a really good question. I guess from just a pure cat and mouse type battle, and really transcending the sport and the mystique behind the two, you'd have to go with Borg and McEnroe, in my opinion. But all those guys, you had Connors and McEnroe, they were both feisty. But for me, in terms of what they did for the sport, getting it going, Borg and McEnroe, right? One was just so stoic, the other was kind of brash. One from a small town, the other one, you know, New York City. It was just, to me, that was it. And whenever they played, and if you look at when they played, I think most people could remember or know about that Wimbledon final when that tiebreaker went on and on and on. And I actually saw that. It was on TV the other day. I was watching Sports Network, and all of a sudden you just roll across and you see, you know, those guys playing. And for me, that does it. And you're right about Navratilova and Everett, although I'm not quite as familiar with the women's side of the game as I am in the men.
I thought you were getting ready to ask me who the greatest individual rivalry was, and I was going to say
Pablo Holmes, you know,
or Hagrid Leonard, something like that. But
I'll go
Borg and
McEnroe. Great answer.
Yeah.
But how much did you enjoy watching that when it comes to the match? Because I know, as you just said, you keep up to date with sports across the board.
Yes, and you know, I find myself, first of all, for those who don't know, the grass has changed. You know, now it's like playing on asphalt. You bounce the ball, it's literally like a hard court. It's slow, as you can tell, all the court was chewed up, you know, up by the net. So the playing styles were different, but I have no doubt in my mind that if you gave Borg the technology that we have today, and you gave McEnroe the technology that we have today, then both those guys would have been just as good today as they were back then, because they were world class in any era.
Our guest, Chris Woodruff, Tennessee men's tennis coach. Chris, how disappointed were you to see them cancel Wimbledon?
Well, I guess from a health standpoint, a safety standpoint, it was obviously the right thing to do. And, you know, I couldn't believe, if I read it, it's maybe the second time ever that they have had to cancel Wimbledon. You guys might be able to speak to that better than me, but I believe I read it's only been canceled one other time. And it's really sad. It's like the Masters for us. It's a huge golf, you know, huge sporting event. And, you know, the Masters are going to go on and play in November. And for us, it, with so many, you know, having that one tour, it's hard to get that event in there. So it was the biggest tournament that we play in, most prestigious. And so obviously, big disappointment, because I do enjoy watching it.
What did you think of the French Tennis Federation having a support fund of about $10 million to help with players who are ranked outside of the top 100?
That was surprising. I had no idea that they, you know, had that kind of money. I mean, I know the U.S. team has a lot of money, but to have that fund is obviously great. But I have no idea the amount of money that you were talking about.
Yeah, that's a pretty good sum to help them out. But just the idea of doing that, that seems – I would have thought maybe the French Federation would have teamed with the USTA perhaps and jointly done that as opposed to just the French Federation doing it. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think also that's the same federation just arbitrarily decided to go off and say we're going to play the French Open at this date. I remember reading something recently where they just went ahead and nobody knew about it, right? And
right.
They just arbitrarily announced, hey, we're playing the tournament on this date, and everybody was like, wow, the U.S. Open, then but we have, when they announced that, I read the article, after further consulting with the players and everybody involved, you can tell they were taking a jab at the French Federation for coming out and doing that.
The Knoxville Challenger, there was a recent meeting. Indications are they're going forward with that. The USTA has not told them no. It's going to be set for the early in November. How big do you think that would be for University of Tennessee to be able to host that Challenger, which has been such a successful event in Knoxville?
Well, obviously, it'd be great. My concern is this. I think the fans really make the Challenger here. They come out and support the event. So you can imagine the disappointment that Helen Ross McNabb Center would probably feel if they say, yes, we're going to run the Challenger, but you can't have any fans come in the building. Because I don't really know the inner workings of that. I'm sure you do have a say in it because they're going to have safety issues and protocol that they're going to have to follow. The tour is going to come in, and they're going to have protocol. I can't imagine everybody using the locker room. I can't imagine everybody stretching and using the weight room there. I just don't know, how in the world that would work. But I think it'd be an incredible disappointment. Great to have the tournament if they can get the fans. It'd be tough if the fans, because the fans really make the event.
Yeah, they do, and they would have to try to have some type of distancing, I think, and limit the amount of attendance if they do. And they've got so many tremendous sponsors that would be hard. But I agree with you. I think the fans make it. I don't know that there's a challenger in the country that draws fans like they do for the challenger here.
The passion. I know a few of the people who've made this thing run, and I just know that it starts, the minute the challenger ends, they're already on the ball trying to get it, up and running. And what can they do better and facilitate and growth and try to make it better for the next year, no doubt.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, always great to catch up with you. Thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully we'll get some pro tennis going here pretty soon, and hopefully with your program, look forward to you getting going and checking to see out how you might do this upcoming season. But thank you for taking the time to be on the show with us.
Okay, guys, always great to catch up. You guys stay safe. Thanks for having me.
All right, you too.
You too, Chris. Thank you very much.
Chris Woodruff, Tennessee men's tennis coach, his thoughts on his program, where it is, and also with pro tennis as well.
Yeah, and it's very appropriate to have him join us today. Yesterday, a special day in the history of Tennessee tennis, May 26, 1980, Mel Purcell and Rodney Harmon captured Tennessee's first NCAA title in tennis, winning the doubles trophy. Same date, 2014, Michaelis Lapidus and Hunter Reese won their second NCAA doubles title for the University of Tennessee. So May 26th, a big date, and as you pointed out, Chris Woodruff, the only Tennessee Vol to come away with the NCAA singles championship.
That's a good note about doubles. I didn't realize that. Yeah, interesting.